Well, good afternoon. This is the second of our quarterly phone calls for 2012 for the business sector of Bridges Out of Poverty. I am Barbara Duncanson. I am the engagement manager for Bridges Out of Poverty, and I am also the interim sector leader for the business sector and seeking someone who will take this job on a permanent basis. So if you're interested, please email me and let me know. It is not a burdensome job. It's kind of fun. Our next dates for our quarterly phone calls will be July 17th and October 16th. We decided upon these at our first phone call, which was in January, and our time is 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So July 17th and October 16th, if you want to mark your calendars now. We also need a speaker for those dates, or speakers for those dates, to talk about applications of Bridges and getting ahead in the business world. In fact, I will even pause for a moment and say, are there any volunteers?
If we have something helpful to share, you know, we're always glad to share stuff. Okay. Thank you. But there might be others who have, you know, more important things to share, so.
Well, I think it's all interesting and important.
Well, I was going to say the same thing. I think, you know, this is Dave Barrett, by the way, and everything you've got going down there with in your area of the world, and, you know, I mean, the fact that you did this, what do you call it, fall blast last year, whatever you called that thing. I mean, you got some pretty innovative and unique things as you try to do this work down there. I mean, you'd be a good one, I think, to tell us about everything that's going on in the South Bend arena.
Well, thank you. Helpful, then why don't we think about it for October, Barb?
That'll be fine. Okay. I have you then. So then we're looking for July, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on the conversation. If anyone wants to raise their hand right now or suggest someone.
Lisa? Who said that?
Nobody's going to
admit. I'm not sure I'm going to be here in July.
That was your conscience speaking, I think.
I'm not 100% sure I'm going to be here that week in July. That's the only thing for me.
Okay, let me just say my email address is bduncanson@ahaprocess.com, and that's B-D-U-N-C-A-N-S-O-N. If you would like to step up for July, please email me. If you would like to step up for the sector leader position, please email me. Again, bduncanson@ahaprocess.com. And also, if you are joining us today and you are not on our business sector list, which means you found out about this through Facebook or some other means, and you want to be on our business sector list, please email me your email address so that we make sure that we have you on our permanent business sector list.
I have 3 weeks
more. Let's go around right now and do our introductions here, and if you just give us your name, where you're located, organization, and then very briefly what you're doing with Bridges in your organization.
Well, I will start. This is Beth Pace. I am with Vectren Energy Delivery, which is a major utility company in Indiana. I'm located in Evansville, Indiana. I am a certified Bridges trainer, and in Evansville, we have blasted over 2,000 individuals with Bridges training, poverty simulations, and we are in our second year of getting ahead in circles.
Hi, my name is Hannah Nitz. I'm calling over from Akron, Ohio. We run the Bridges Initiative here and also do Getting Ahead. We have just over 2,000 people who have gone through Bridges training and about 200 Getting Ahead graduates, and we are on track to start Circles in 2013. We have a steering committee that has just recently kind of dove into the business sector. I am a social worker, and I lead the initiative, so it's very social services heavy. And we have a few business professionals who have come on board who are trying to gather up a lot of HR staff in the area and other business professionals and really get them involved. We have bought in from a major CEO in the area, and we're trying to build off of that. So I'm just kind of here to learn today.
Who are you employed by, Hannah?
It's an interesting question. I'm employed by a faith-based nonprofit here in Akron called OpenM. But there are 22 different agencies and organizations here who work together for the Bridges Initiative. Recently, we've worked towards joint funding, so I am newly funded by our United Way, who is kind of helping us with this initiative.
This is Tim Plant. I'll go next since I asked the question. I'm also a social worker, Hannah. I am executive director of HealthStar Home Health in North St. Paul, Minnesota, and we provide home health services with a particular focus on Native American communities in the Twin Cities, the greater Bemidji, Minnesota area, and Duluth. Also have a smaller office serving the Navajo Nation in Gallup, New Mexico. Personally, I was first introduced to the Bridges curriculum with training that Ruby Payne provided when I was CEO of PATH, which is a foster care agency based in Minnesota, several years ago. And I've been in my current role about a year and a half, and we have several staff who've been through some training, but we've really yet to formalize our application in our home health company and are looking to do so.
Wonderful. I'm hoping, this is Bonnie Bezzotta in South Bend, Indiana, with the St. Joe County Bridges Out of Poverty Initiative. And Tim, it's great to connect with you. I hope we can all share emails because I'd love to make sure you get added onto our newsletter, but also to find out more about what you're doing. So
great.
It's very interesting. And we've had
I'll get you connected.
Okay, thank you. We have had some support and funding to the Pokagon Band of the Potawatomis here, and hope over time to strengthen that. That started in 2004, really as just sort of a community response, and then we began as a nonprofit in late 2008. And our numbers are a bit similar to Hannah's. We've got about 2,000 plus people who've gone through training and about 400 Getting Ahead graduates. And then we've put some follow-up programming in place, a financial management class, something we call monthly networking meetings, and then the Future Story Project, which is about both employment and leadership. We are vigorously trying to reach out to new sectors, including business and healthcare, and also have a wonderful board, and Barb is on that, and we're really pushing ourselves to think about how we have this kind of dual application and dual capacity building so that we're supporting individuals transitioning out of poverty, but we're also supporting the agencies and the community to address gaps and barriers and trying to figure out what that piece looks like. So we also have a strong network of partner agencies that we work with as well.
So I'll go next. My name is Lisa Falcone, and I am out of Burlington, Vermont. I work for the United Way of Chittenden County, and our major Bridges program is called Working Bridges, which is a employment-based program. We work with about 50 employers across various sectors. We have healthcare, we have manufacturing, we work with higher education institutions, and we bring training to those folks, and we also have strategies that we utilize at the workplace using some of the Bridges concepts that have helped us generate those strategies. We too are moving more into the health arena and are interested in taking a next step, which we're hoping to do with some funding around bridging the cliff. And what we mean by that is, as we look at folks who are in entry-level jobs, how do we move them from being relying on work plus work supports or income supports and getting them over the cliff in our, in, that's what we call it in our state. I don't know if that's consistent across the states, to more sufficiency wages so that they can maintain their families on their own. So that's where we are.
Did we have a few more people join us?
Well, I'll introduce myself, I guess. This is Dave Barrett. I'm with a manufacturing firm named Cascade Engineering, located in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We've used the Bridges materials, the Bridges training. Really, it was a key to turning our welfare to career program from really a very tentative at best program to something that's gained some notoriety and some level of success. So we usually give all the credit, or a lot of the credit, to the Bridges materials and the concepts that Ruby has espoused in her framework book. So we've got a welfare to career program, about currently about 70 people in it. We get about 40% of the people that go through the program completely off of welfare and to become self-sufficient. We've got a lot of programs that help do that. We have an on-site DHS caseworker, which was also another key to the success of our program. So I do the Bridges training inside the organization, and that's what I'm doing here.
What was the percentage, Dave, you said you get completely off welfare?
You get about 40% of the people that complete the program. It's usually about 2 years that we're successful. We get about 40% of them off.
Okay.
And who else do we have that has introduced themselves?
Oh, this is Randy Osmond. I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm the executive director of The Source. And Dave and I are presenting today, so I figure I'll wait until Dave does his presentation, and then I'll share more about what The Source is doing.
Okay.
Anyone else? Has everyone introduced themselves? So then we will move right to our presentation. And our two presenters, of course, are Dave Barrett of Cascade Engineering and Randy Osmond of The Source, both of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And they are going to talk to us about making the case how to sell bridges to management. So your turn.
All right. Well, Randy and I went back and forth on emails about who should go first. And I tried to get him to go first. He wanted me to go first. So I guess I'm going to go first. I'm going to start by assuming that people, and maybe that's the wrong assumption, really understand the Cascade story around a welfare to career. And so this has been something we've been trying to do, and that is, how do we get other businesses engaged in to either create some type of a welfare to career program, or just to get engaged in reducing poverty in their community? And we really did not have much success until The Source came into existence, which is what Randy's going to talk about. And so we've done a lot of talking around here about how do you get business engaged, because that's the group that I think is missing from the table, at least in most of my conversations in most areas of the country. You got a lot of social agencies engaged. You got governmental agencies engaged. You have faith-based organizations engaged. But business seemed to be the group that's not fully engaged. So why and how do you get management in a business, a for-profit business, to become engaged? And so I'm just going to go through what I think it takes, or how you might be able to convince managers, CEOs, and other organizations to become engaged. And so I'm going to really talk about three key things. And this is, I call it, you know, what can we play to in them that will maybe get them to engage? And so the first one I says, well, we can play to their ego. In other words, what does business or what can business bring to the table? And I, you know, Fred Keller has used, Fred's the CEO of Cascade, has really used Willis Harmon's quote many times. I've heard him say it, and I use it too, and that is, business has become the most powerful institution on the planet. The dominant institution in any society needs to take responsibility for the whole. And so that's one of the premises. Why are they the most powerful institution on the planet? Well, it has to do, what does a business offer in the way of helping solve some of the social issues of our day, like reducing poverty? Well, this is so you're playing to their ego. You need them because they bring project leadership skills, project management skills. They can supply human resources in terms of people. They also supply a diversity of ideas. They bring a different perspective. They bring the business perspective. They usually have pretty good problem-solving tools. They're good at goal setting. They're good at strategic planning. They have expertise in those areas. They're good at financial acumen, so bringing the financial piece to the table. And the other thing, and I think the most powerful thing they have, is they have a captive audience, which means they have the opportunity to change people's paradigms. And when I say that, that means that they can require of their employees to go through diversity training, or to go through the hidden rules of economic diversity, or to go through the full bridges training. Because until you change people's paradigms, and that means business people's paradigms as well as the employees that work inside of an organization, you're probably not going to make a whole lot of progress going down the bridges road. But again, that's what bridges can do. Bridges can change people's paradigms. The second one you can play to is you can play to their conscience. But I would say conscious with reason and logic attached to that. You know, the question I would ask a manager or a CEO is, why not do something good for society outside of providing jobs? Because that's what a lot of them say. I provide jobs. That's what I do for society. And certainly that's a good thing. They also give money to charities. That's a good thing. We want them to continue doing that. But what contribution could they really make for the good of society outside of providing jobs and giving money? What's the business case for not engaging? And I'll tell you where I got this from. Ray Anderson, who passed away about a year ago, was the CEO of Interface Fabrics. Now, he's talking about an environmental perspective. But, you know, he asked this. He said, instead of me telling you what's the business case for being an environmental steward, what's the business case for not being an environmental steward? In other words, what's the business case for polluting our water? What's the business case for destroying natural ecosystems? If you can tell me the business case for that, then I will give you the business case for the environmental, the positive environmental side. Well, we could do the same thing here. What's the business case for ignoring poverty and allowing it to continue to grow with increasing numbers of children going hungry on a daily basis? What's the business case when at the end of 4 years, after 400 freshmen started high school, less than 60% actually graduate? What's the business case when just 13.1% of graduates from at least one public high school were math proficient and only 34.8% were reading proficient? And these are in Grand Rapids public schools we're talking about. What's the business case to have the cost of corrections at each level of incarceration increase 660% from 1982 to 2006, which costs about $68 billion a year? You know, what's the business case when you have 100,000 juveniles released from custody facilities each year and with 66% of them not going back to school and 50 to 70% returning to the prison system after they've committed more crimes? And then you got, who are they committing the crimes against? Maybe businesses and maybe the employees who are in those businesses. Why? Because in part, at least in Grand Rapids, 60% of businesses will not hire ex-offenders regardless of the offense. So what's the business case for allowing those things to go unchecked? So that might be an argument. And then the third is play to the wallet. And when I say that, it really play to their perception or idea of competitive advantage. So you ask them, what's the competitive advantage? What is competitive advantage worth? What is your reputation worth to be known as a community leader? Does your reputation help attract talent to your organization? And how do these tie to the cost of disengaged employees, absenteeism, and turnover? What's the business case for having a reputation as a great place to work? Are there any benefits for an employer of choice? What's the advantage of having a reputation as being socially responsible and an organization that helps people get off welfare and out of poverty? What does it mean to you to have a highly engaged, committed, and loyal employees? Do you want to win the war for talent? I mean, these are all, to me, business case reasons that organizations ought to consider engaging in these things. And is it tied to the bottom line? Well, we think so. Fred Keller said many times, in today's world, it's not enough to have technology. In fact, technology by itself is not a sustainable position. Any other company can buy the equipment just like we use. They can purchase the same raw materials we use. They can build buildings just like we have. However, the one thing they cannot buy is our culture, which includes the loyalty and commitment of our employees. That is a sustainable competitive position. So when you think about that, if you want to be an employer of choice, one of the things that makes you an employer of choice is employee pride. When employees are proud of the organization they work for, believe me, they're going to usually stay in that organization, and they're going to contribute their ingenuity and their creativity and their discretionary effort. And I don't think there's a business person around who has employees who would not want that out of their employees. And so I think that's one of the ways, when you talk about engaging in something like reducing poverty or in improving the education system or reducing recidivism, the results can be tangible, because when you reduce turnover because they love working in your organization, that's an economic thing. But what is your employee's loyalty worth to you? What is employee commitment worth to you? It's just like Ray Anderson asking the question, you tell me what the business case is for destroying the environment, and I'll tell you what the business case is for being socially responsible, if you will. And so that's what I think that we've learned over the years that might touch the hearts and minds of some management types. So if you have any questions, I'll take them now, or we can wait till after Randy and just let you hear, because Randy's going to be tied, I think, in some ways to Cascade Engineering, but I have no idea what he's going to say.
So are there any questions for Dave?
Dave, this is Bonnie.
I'm going to take that as a no. Bonnie, did you have one? I'm sorry.
I was just going to mention more, just a couple of thoughts, Dave, as you were talking, because I have the advantage of, you know, I tail Dave and hear his talk as often as I can, so I'm always thinking about it. I just wanted to mention three things that came to my mind as you were talking very briefly. One is, one of the strengths I think business brings too that I'm interested in looking at more is measurement. You know, how do we measure outcomes? And Father Larry Snyder, who's the head of Catholic Charities nationally, was presented at Notre Dame recently, and he was talking about three things we have to do to change the way we address poverty. And one of the things he talked about was being more accountable for our outcomes and how we measure the difference we're making. So I know that's something I would like to figure out better with our business partners. And then we're also trying to make the case locally of how poverty affects economic development, that we can't have a healthy climate for attracting new businesses and keeping workers as poverty drains away community resources. And I was just at a SHRM luncheon this afternoon, and they said there are five reasons employees are not engaged in the workplace, and trust and communication were the top two. So just to, you know, emphasize that last point you were making, Dave, that you can't buy the company's culture. So thank you.
I have a question also, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
We in Akron here have been starting to engage the business sector, and those points that you made, those three, are really great. As we're starting to do that, we're kind of in this position where we're trying to figure out the chicken or the egg. Is it best, in your opinion, to approach and kind of attack the CEO community first over the HR community, or to start in more of a SHRM and start talking to HR professionals first?
Well, listen, I think wherever you can get traction, that's where you go. But I think our philosophy is if you don't get the CEO engaged, because I'll tell you, I've done many presentations, and Fred's done many presentations, and Ron Jimerson's done many presentations where the room is filled with HR people who are all very interested and really would like to do something, but then nothing happens.
Right. Just the talk.
And they mean well. They want to do it, but let's be truthful. You know, when you're talking about this, there's a lot of cultural elements here. And if your CEO is not on board with wanting to go down this road, because it's going to cost the money to do the training. And I think, to me, the key for us was the amount of training we had to do up front. We had to run all of our supervisors through the bridges, all the plant managers, all the HR people. And so for us, that was a significant amount of time and effort we had to put into that. If you don't really have the heart to do it, what's gonna create the ability to do it, right? So, but again, in some organizations, HR may have that type of clout, authority, influence to make it happen. So I don't discount HR at all, but it just seems like whenever we talk to people, it's the CEOs who are absent.
Okay. Thank you.
But I think I heard you say, was it you that said you do have a CEO that is?
We do. We have a
champion.
FedEx Custom Critical here in Akron. We have a CEO who's engaged and interested and has sent some of her HR staff, and we just got in to do diversity training at her business, which is one of the largest businesses here in Akron. And we're trying to kind of capitalize on that movement and work with them the best we can.
Because Randy, I may be stealing a little of his thunder. If not, we believe this for sure, that, and Fred believes this because that's the group he likes to talk to. Because if you can get a CEO as a champion, because CEOs have a tendency of liking to listen to other CEOs, right? Mm-hmm. I can go in and talk to them and tell them the Cascade story and stuff, but I think it has a lot more impact when Fred Keller, as our CEO, goes in and talks to them. So
that
if you can develop that CEO into a real champion, he or she probably has the best potential to impact other CEOs and get them engaged.
Thank you.
Could you say a little bit more about what exactly we're asking CEOs and companies to do?
Well, to me, it depends. I mean, whenever I talk about it, I'm saying, can we get, you know, our welfare to career program, at one point in time, DHS helped us do a study. We had 87 people in the program. 20 of them were completely off welfare, off any assistance at all. The others were in different, you know, stages of it. They were getting some assistance. They showed that we saved the state of Michigan $1 million a year. Well, what if you had 100 Cascade Engineers? Could the state of Michigan use $100 million? Well, sure it could, right? So we were out trying to get other companies to other businesses to get engaged and to start their own type of welfare to career program. So for us, it is an intentional design program that brings people off welfare roles. You teach them all you need to teach them. You onboard them correctly. You provide them with employment, and then you continually try to develop them. Now, that's a very slow process because you can't just push them. And so it's an intentionally designed program to help people bridge off of welfare roles and out of poverty. Yeah, we wish other businesses would want to engage in. Now, Randy's going to present a different model than that, but similar to that.
Is that my lead-in, Dave?
Well, it's probably a good lead-in.
So the source was created about 9 years ago. And, in a nutshell, what happened was Fred Keller is, fairly famous around here. There are a lot of people who really respect him. They watched the way he developed the Welfare to Career program. Watched Dave and Ron Jimerson and his people develop this program and started to see some success, and they really admired what he was trying to take on in our community. Mark Peters, who calls himself a disciple of Fred Keller, owns a small manufacturing company here in Grand Rapids called Butterball Farms. They're a small butter manufacturer. And Mark loved what Fred did, and Mark was really struggling with retention issues with his workforce. And when he started to talk to other CEOs in the area, he was finding out that a lot of his workers were quitting and walking across the street to work for another employer for, you know, a nickel more sometimes. And so they started to talk about, well, quitting or being fired and then going next door. So Mark got together about 8 or 10 local businesses all within a half a mile or so from each other, and they started to have the conversation about why they were having to fire and rehire so many people, and essentially sharing the same pool of people who just didn't seem to be getting enough traction to maintain a job. They came up with the idea of starting a nonprofit. So this is, I think, really the first very unique part of this is these were CEOs who created a nonprofit versus a nonprofit seeking out CEOs. So these guys, they started a nonprofit, and they really drive the direction of the nonprofit. It's a members-only nonprofit. Everyone pays a fee to be a part of the nonprofit, and it is, and the fees are based on utilization rates. So I look at how much everyone used our services last year, and then I bounce that percentage of utilization against next year's budget, and that's how we come up with a 12-month fee for everyone. What the source does is I have a contract with the state of Michigan for 3 Department of Human Service welfare caseworkers. These work, I pay half of their cost to the state. The other half of those costs of these workers bounced against TANF funds. So we actually don't cost the state of Michigan anything to employ these 3 caseworkers. A normal caseworker in our county would carry a caseload of 250 to 700 cases, and our caseworkers carry a caseload of about 125, which means that they've got additional time to build relationships, not only with the clients, but also with the HR staff of the employers, and they have extra time to utilize and seek out additional funding, including federal TANF funding. So, in addition to the public caseworkers, I have 3 private caseworkers. And these private caseworkers serve anyone within the companies, regardless of income. So there are no income restraints on people's ability to access these resources. We will not only meet with the employee to address any issues they might have, we'll also meet with their spouses and their children if necessary. So the idea is that if we can provide holistic services to the family, then the probability of the employee staying employed obviously increases. So that is, in a nutshell, that's the source. It is a shared cost model. In addition to providing the casework services, we also provide trainings. So, for instance, one company may come to me and say, you know, I've got 2 employees and they need to learn more about lean manufacturing practices. I would approach all the other companies within our network, find out if they had any people that needed to learn the same types of skills, and then I would develop a class by reaching out to local colleges or training institutions, bringing in an instructor, and then we would share the cost against all the participants across the different companies. We now have 19 companies involved in the source. We cut across 4 different sectors. I have manufacturing, I have education, I have service industry, and then long-term healthcare is our most recent one. Within the manufacturing group, we have got some of these companies have vendor-supplier relationships, and some of them are direct competitors in the industry. And certainly our long-term care facilities, I have five of those. They're in direct competition in the community as well, not only for clients but also for employees. I think one of the benefits nobody really saw in the beginning of this was the incredible networking potential that this has provided across these different companies. Many of them are small to mid-sized companies, and they may have, you know, one or two HR people. But when they come to one of our board meetings, they can share their stories or their concerns or their troubles with other HR people in the community. They share resources, information, policies and procedures in some cases. It's just provided a huge benefit for these HR professionals. And then, as Dave had mentioned, the CEOs get together at least once a year at one of our board meetings, and they too have become friends and mentors and support each other. And so those are two of the side benefits for joining the source. Where Bridges come in, and so I want to be clear here, the source does not provide any employment services. We only service the employees of member companies, and the HR directors for each company is responsible for doing the hiring. That said, once they're hired in, the employees have access to the services that we provide. And again, the employee could be self-referred. They could be referred by their supervisor if a supervisor notices maybe an attitude issue or an attendance issue. They may suggest that they come to the source to sort out whatever issues they might have. On occasion, it could be mandatory. A manager may say you have to go to the source to address maybe a drug issue or whatever it might be if you're going to retain your employment. That doesn't happen very often, but it can happen on occasion. We're third party, and we provide these services. They are confidential services to the employee. We only report out aggregate information, except when an employee's job is on the line, and then we would report back that we're satisfied that the employee is meeting the requirements that the company had dictated. But other than that, we wouldn't necessarily get into details about what those were. From a Bridges perspective, all of our caseworkers have been trained in Bridges, including the Department of Human Service workers that we have here. They've also been trained. Joyce Gutierrez-Marsh, who originally started at Cascade Engineering, is now one of my DHS caseworkers here. She's a certified trainer. I'm now a certified trainer. We do integrate the Bridges information into the trainings that we do here. So we do a wide variety of trainings, and wherever we can integrate kind of that philosophy or even very specific components of Bridges, we do try to integrate those into all of our trainings. So we don't see Bridges as kind of a separate piece that comes and goes. We just see that as part of our overall philosophy of working with individuals and trying to assist them as we train them. So that is the long and the short of it. We have we do have other companies looking to join the source. I'm working very closely with Dave's counterpart at Cascade Engineering. We're building a consulting model where we can bring this to other communities within Michigan, but also across the nation. We've replicated our model in Colorado and in Seattle. And we are currently in conversations with the state of Michigan. They're interested in trying to figure out how to take this CE/source model and implement it within the state of Michigan, essentially due to the success rate that we have. I don't think Dave mentioned it. We keep track of retention throughout the year, particularly for the individuals on welfare. And across the 19 companies, our average is about 87% retention rate. So those are that's a pretty good number, whether you're on welfare or not. So we're really proud of that particular number. End of the day, why do companies do this? We provide a return on investment. We calculate a return on investment that the CEOs got together, and they said that, you know, they came up with a formula. It has to do with the number of barriers that we resolve throughout the year. It has to do with how many trainings we do, how many hours our caseworkers, both private and public, spend with their workers. We add a value to all of that and then punch that up against their contribution. And last year, we had return on investment on average across the 19 companies of over 290%. So that number was in part due to the fact that we're a nonprofit and we were able to access some federal training dollars. That helps. And then our DHS workers were able to get a hold of about $142,000 of discretionary TANF funds that typically a typical welfare recipient wouldn't necessarily have access to. So that's it for me. If you have questions, I'd be happy to share any more information.
How did you happen to pick Colorado and Seattle for replications?
Fred Keller actually was out in Colorado. He gave a speech to Jefferson County, out in Jefferson County. Dave might have some insight onto who he actually spoke to, but then as Fred references, the source is kind of from an evolutionary perspective, I guess, we're kind of the next stage from a collaborative model. Fred referenced the source, and somebody out in Jefferson County contacted us. I'm not sure how Seattle heard about the source.
This
might
have
been through a Bridges conference. Somebody know? I heard an
Oh, this is Liddy from WorkLife.
Oh, there's Liddy. How you doing?
Yeah, sorry about that. I've been on and off.
Okay.
I don't know if you're still interested in how it came to Colorado, but Jefferson County was the county that brought it to Colorado. They had some seed money through some state funds and connected with Cascade early on, and with the source early on, took some employers from Jefferson County to the source to see how that model worked over there. And the employers got really excited and decided that they wanted to start that model here. So we contracted and used the source and Cascade as consultants to help us start the model in Colorado.
And Lydia is the executive director of that model out there now.
Yes.
Lydia, do you know how the source got hooked up in Seattle?
I think that was another kind of happened organically like we did. I think the nonprofit out there was looking for, just kind of stumbled upon the source. I don't think they ever took employers over there, but we're looking for retention-based services, and I know used the ED before you as a consultant. I don't know if they ever connected with Cascade, but I know they used Andrew as a consultant to bring that model out to Washington State.
Okay. Any other questions?
This is Bonnie. I've got some questions for you,
Bonnie.
And Dave, Randy. I have four questions. One is that I'm interested to know if you or Dave and Cascade ever considered implementing the Getting Ahead curriculum. We're doing some research on it to try to understand better what happens, but we see really powerful shifts for people who go through Getting Ahead, and we've also been thinking about how to use it with people who are already working, and I keep nudging Phil and saying, you know, how could we make it shorter and a little bit of a different conversation for people who are working, but
there's some really good stuff in getting ahead. So one question is, you know, if you're not using it, why not, or do you see a place for it in the future? My second question is, as you begin looking at what are the predominant barriers that come up for the clients that you're serving, does that then a launching pad for a community conversation to say, look, you know, we're really seeing that transportation is a really critical barrier for people getting to their jobs or childcare or something else, so that there's kind of a bridge from this rich data that you're collecting that could actually then change some of the structural pieces in the community? And then, Dave, I'm wondering, you said about 40% have moved, used the job to move out of poverty, and I'm trying to think about, is that a really good high number, or, you know, what happened to the other 60%? And then any reflections on, I know you guys have been a model across the country for years now, and why, you know, why there isn't dozens of companies doing this. I mean, we're trying to get companies to step forward in our community as well, and I don't know why it's such a profound model and it's got such a win-win to it. So if you could speak to some of the reasons why you think we're not gaining more traction than we have to date.
Yeah, let me cover the three out of the four there. I am trained in getting ahead. But as the executive director here, I really am here to meet the needs of the company. So if the companies don't direct me to implement a program, it's really difficult for me. I really don't have that. I can't just say we're going to run this program. You have to send your employees, and this is what we're going to do, and this is what's going to cost you. So I really, the model is really created to meet their needs as they see them. Now, in that, I try to spur them along and, you know, give them a lot of information and help inform their thinking in that. But at this point in time, there just has not been interest from the getting ahead perspective. Regarding taking our information and working to move systems change, yes, we certainly do that. Cascade has got some history about working with our local bus organization to extend the line out to Cascade so that people in poverty could take the bus and make it to work. I have a very small staff. There's only six of us at the source. And the one person I haven't mentioned yet is we have a wellness program, which kind of goes with this whole collaborative sense that it's CEO driven, and that is healthcare costs continue to rise as they do. The CEOs got together and said, "What can we do as a collaborative to start to address the health of our employees?" And a pilot program was born out of that, and now we have a wellness program within eight of our companies. But as part of the membership, you're not required to be a part of the wellness program. So this is where the CEOs still maintain a lot of autonomy about what programs they want their people to be involved in or not, and at what costs. So my small group, my three private caseworkers and myself, we're involved in a lot of the community discussions, various committees throughout the city, and we try to continue to influence and inform the community about what the needs are. So as I have, as I represent 19 companies and 7,000 employees, the truth is there's a lot of nonprofits that this is a beneficial relationship for them to have. If I can redirect our employees' needs in their direction, then that helps their numbers as well. So, you know, it's about building relationships and leveraging what influence we have in the community and really, really working to have systems change. And the third or the fourth question you had, Bonnie, why isn't this national? I guess I'd just like to reiterate that there are six of us here at the source. The goal of the CEOs historically have been that we serve the needs of their employees, and there's been discussion around you know, do we want to franchise this model or is a consultative model better? I think once we were sure that the model worked and it was consistent, the old executive director, Andrew Brower, he did start to reach out into other communities and develop it, but we've never been really staffed to do that. I've just recently gotten permission to look at staffing up where we could start to do both local growth, state growth, and then national growth. So I've just now gotten that approval to do that under a consulting type of model to offset some costs. So I think in the next year or two, you'll see us out there more in more and more communities really trying to develop this. And then, Dave, I think she had a, the third question was more for you.
I don't know. What was that question?
I was hoping you were going to remember.
Well, you know, one was the the Circles program. And, you know, I'm just going to be honest with you is that, you know, Ron has retired from the company. And while he still works in the community on our behalf, Ron looked at the program a few years ago and thought it was too costly. I don't know where all the costs come from, but that's why, because he's on a new program called Seeds of Promise that's working with one of the poorest neighborhoods in the in Grand Rapids and trying to help that whole, I don't know how many square blocks it is, really become self-sufficient. And any families on welfare to help them become more self-sufficient. So that's a whole process they've been working on now for several years. I've thought about it for Caskey. What could we do with it? But I'm going to be honest. I'm not looking for things to do. I mean, my plate is already full. And so it's kind of like other CEOs getting on board. You got to have somebody in the organization that has the time and the wherewithal to champion it. But I think that the Circles program is good, and if we get to the point where resources are freed up or I have the time to drive it, I would very much love to go down that road and see what we could do. Why don't other CEOs get it? You know what, Bonnie? That's where I would love to be able to pick the minds of those CEOs who get it, you know, Fred Kellers, the Mark Peters, the CEO of Rhino Foods, the Cincinnati Works, I mean, some of the CEOs out in Jefferson County. Why? Why did they get it? Because the only thing I can think of is a couple of things. One, they really don't care. And maybe the reason they don't care is that they were educated and brought up on the, you know, Milton Friedman School of Business, and that the business of business is to make money. It's not to be a social engineer or not to get engaged in social responsibility types of thing, because Friedman said that's unethical, it's immoral, and shouldn't be allowed. You know, so I don't know why they don't want to get engaged. Some of it might be ignorance. They just don't know what they don't know. I really don't know why, but it's somewhere in that. If you don't really have a heart for people and you don't really feel that your organization has a responsibility to help solve the social issues of our day, why would you get engaged?
Thank you. Hey, and Dave, just a quick question. I didn't ask about Circles. We don't do Circles either. But the question was, what do you think keeps the other 60% from having moved over to self-sufficiency? And I asked that question in part because we just really struggle with, you know, watching people take two steps forward and three steps back and two steps sideways. And, you know, what is it that keeps it in so you've got a different container there being an employer, and I just was curious if you had some thoughts about this 40% make it because of these reasons or this 60% isn't making it because of these reasons.
Well, I don't have any hard data or specifics, but I think we're happy with 40%. Would we love to see it higher? Absolutely. But, you know, you got to look at the population you're dealing with. And many of them, you know, just you know, it's hard for them to bridge out of that poverty mindset, and so they might do good and get part of the way there, and then they kind of screw up. And so we've had over almost probably now over 500 people start or go through part of the program or all the program, right? So, you know, 40% of those that go through the program, we think is a pretty good number, you know. But we don't have nothing to compare it to.
Right. Yes.
The source is currently working on a social ROI number. We've got a local organization here, and we're working with Kellogg Institute to try to come up with that kind of that number that Dave had talked about earlier, where Cascade saved the state $1 million. We believe that number, if you really start to look at the social ramifications of having people employed at a level of self-sufficiency, what is the true impact of that? So we're working with a local organization to come up with that number, and I don't know when that number will come out, but I'm sure that we'll be happy to share that with anybody who's interested.
I'd love to know that. Please.
It's a tricky number,
yeah.
but I do think it's something we can get at.
That's exciting.
Okay, we are coming up upon 5 o'clock. Do not want to keep anyone over time. Does anyone have one more question they're burning to ask?
I'm happy to stay on the line as long as people have questions. So
sure,
contact me directly.
Then I will bring this to a close. We'll stay on the line for those who might want to ask another question, and I will just remind you that our next call will be July 17th, and we will have a Dynamite program to be announced. And if you see that program, let me know. And thank you all for being with us, and thank you so much, Dave and Randy, for the presentation. So this concludes our teleconference.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Randy?
Yes.
Are you there? Hopefully we stay connected. It's Liddy. Hi.
Yeah, hey, Liddy.
That social ROI number, have you looked at our website in the economic factors that we bring through the community? Have you looked at that?
Not lately, no. No?
Okay.
So have you got some numbers like that?
Yeah, I'll send it to you separately in a PDF that I have. An evaluator here in Denver helped us come up with the numbers and the, what is it called, I guess an economic factor. So you save this job. Multiplier, yes. Economic multiplier. And so it's in the calculation that we have. There's a whole big Excel database behind what I'm going to give you.
Okay.
But I'll send you the PDF that shows that.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Liddy, this is Beth.
Oh, hi, Beth.
I'm sorry. This is Beth. Can you send that to me also, please?
Yeah, so I'll send it. I'll send it to the Bridges group.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
if you send it to me, I'll make sure anyone else who wants it gets it sent too.
Okay. Good to talk to you, Randy.
Sorry, I couldn't hear all
your presentation. Actually, I was talking to Andrew on the other line. So.
Oh, were you? Okay, great. How's he doing?
He's doing well. Some good news. So very excited.
Hey, well, I look forward to hearing about it.
Yeah. He's doing well.